Hey guys, it's Kirby Sneed. You're listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott and Adam.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the Walk Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan. Wire.
And another one. My goodness.
So let's start with addressing with where I am podcasting from today. I know it looks like I am in an attic, and that is correct.
Yeah,
so there. my mom is getting married tomorrow. I'm in Kelowna right now. And of course, my sister's in town from PEI. It's like the first time that the family has seen each other and stuff throughout this pandemic. Yes. Where we've all kind of been able to meet up. And of course, they've got a full house. We go to the hotel here right away, but I needed somewhere to do this. So again, I just wanted everyone to know that, like, I've not become like this very brazen serial killer where I'm like podcasting now from where my victims are.
You look like you're on the set of Arrested Development right now.
Right? Okay, perfect. I'm George Sr. up yes. in the attic.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you for getting the reference, for sure.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Walk Off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by my good friend and co-host Adam Mack. We have got a phenomenal guest for you today, Kirby Sneed, AAA pitcher with the Toronto Blue Jays. He is in the midst of a very good season with AAA Buffalo Bison. We may even see him this year. That's how well he's doing. Big lefty. Got some things to say. So we'll get to that in probably 30 to 40 minutes here. Of course, if you're listening on YouTube, you'll just find that under the full conversation pull down tab there, Kirby Sneed. All of our guests are brought to you by yourrate.ca. Of course, Darren Brown, the mortgage broker, sure to help you get into that mortgage you're after, whether you're renewing your current one or looking for a new one. Darren Brown will help you out. That's yourrate.ca, paperless and COVID friendly. The Walk Off Podcast on YouTube and Instagram at Walk Off Podcast on Twitter. We're quite active on all of those, so feel free to follow us. And we'll do the same right back. All right, buddy. Let's get into this. Because we've actually got lots to talk about today. Yeah, I feel like it's a big show in front of us.
I know. I had breakfast this morning. I'm ready for it.
You're ready to rant. Now, listen, before we get negative, I do wish to start this cast off with a shining light of positivity. How many guys have won the Triple Crown? You already know this.
Yeah, I'm not even going to guess because I know it.
It's 11.
In the history of all of
baseball. In the history of Major League Baseball, there have been 11 Triple Crown winners. The last one, 2011, with Hall of Fame, soon to be Hall of Famer, Miggy Cabrera.
And that really kind of skews the fact of how rare, like, just that there's been one recently within the last mm-hmm. like decade or so. Because before that,
it was 1968.
Like, right.
Like, honestly, man, as a baseball fan, to get to see a Triple Crown threat on the team you cheer for, that's not a thing. Like, that is not a thing. That's not something baseball fans get to enjoy, get to experience. And here we are watching a 22-year-old kid on this Blue Jays team, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Just what a treat to watch. And this is one thing I think that as a Blue Jays fan, we all need to kind of take a step back from this playoff race we're in and how you feel about what they're doing day to day and just understand that we're watching something. Listen, Leafs fans get to watch more cups won than baseball fans get to watch guys chase the Triple Crown. Yeah. Like that should really put some perspective in it. For you, if you're a Leafs fan, like, this is wild that what we're seeing. I mean, he is first in RBIs. He has 79 RBIs on the season. Like, Adam, there's 70 games left. Yeah. Like, it's unbelievable. He's second in home runs right now, two behind Shohei Ohtani, Vladdy with 32, Ohtani with 34, and he's nipping at his heels. And I mean, technically, you could even say Vladdy's slumping a little bit, which is just absolutely astronomical to even think because he's hitting 329, which is the worst he's hit all year. and he's 2 points behind Michael Brantley, who's hitting .331 for the top batting average in the league. Like, he is right there on the verge of the triple crown.
Yeah.
And before we get into some of the ups and downs and the trade deadline, and of course the Cleveland Indians have changed their name and Nelson Cruz has moved. So before we get into all of that, I just wish Blue Jays fans, myself included, to take a step back and be like, we are witnessing something incredibly cool that most baseball fans will never get to witness in their, in their fandom.
No, you're right. It's pretty amazing. Whether he gets it or not, just the fact that he's even in the race, and he's
the fact we're 70 games old. Out and he's right there. Exactly, man. It is wild. All right, so now let's take a little bit of a negative turn here. Joel Piamps was traded to the Kansas City Royals for cash considerations a couple days ago. Now, fringe guy, he did well for the Blue Jays while he was in the pen. You know, kind of a low leverage dude, put up decent numbers.
Yep.
Now, he was recently moved down to AAA to make room on the 40-man roster. But something happened yesterday that bothered both of us.
Yeah.
And if you wish to kind of jump in here with the whole,
well, there was speculation. There was speculation as to why was he traded. I mean, we kept Chatwood, but we traded Pie. Like, there's a lot of guys where,
yes,
it's like, did we need to get rid of Pie Amps? He wasn't even that bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the demotion was more of a, we just didn't quite have room for him on the big, yes, club. And then speculate, and I hate even using the word speculation because it wasn't presented as speculation, and I think that's, no, what really,
the word reportedly kept being thrown around.
Yeah, so across Twitter, across Instagram, across all these different platforms where a bunch of, what's the right word for it? A bunch of
podcasters? Like, yeah. I don't know.
I know.
Like, and honestly, like, some of the guys who reported on this, I quite like what they're doing content-wise for, yeah, the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I mean,
that we're, said,
we're all in this together. We're all, mm-hmm, fans. We've all got our hot takes. But there's a difference between a hot take and speculating. And trust me, I'm going to speculate in a few minutes here about the Boston Red Sox. there's a difference between making a post going, hey, I wonder if this is why something happened, and putting in your tweet or your post that
reportedly
or sources
speculation
say,
has it. Yes.
Yeah, even speculation has it would be a more sincere term than what was being used. Basically, I mean, we're beating around the bush here, but yeah, it was being thrown out there that the reason Piamps was traded was because he wasn't vaccinated.
And that he refused to get vaccinated. And
the Blue Jays didn't want to deal with issues at the border. Right? Obviously, going back to Toronto in a week now.
Now, this ramped up.
Presented as this is the case. Like, we're, yes, hearing it. Obviously, the Jays can't officially say it, but that now, is listen, what has happened.
This got so out of hand that poor Joel Piamps literally had to put out on his social media his vaccination card.
Which shows he was vaccinated back in April.
And doesn't that show you, too, the pressure of social media put on this guy? Like, this is a fringe ball player. The last thing he needs is one more obstacle to overcome getting to the bigs.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll move on from here, but it is frustrating to watch that word reportedly thrown around by people who aren't reporters. And yeah. Like,
it's just like, I read it on a Reddit page, or
somebody, so now it's fact.
Or somebody texted me and was like, hey, do you think this happened? And now you're just presenting it. And it sucks when it's like, I mean, we have a decent following ourselves now, but when you hear stuff being presented, and, you know, it picks up. This is the social media world we live in, right? Stuff, yes, gets picked up, and it's just,
and it is a divisive subject right now, the vaccination stuff. So, like, it really, yeah, put Joel in a really rough position. Totally. I just feel sorry for the guy to get dealt to Kansas City and then have this as, like, the stigma attached to him.
Well, it's funny, too, because
makes him seem like a not a team player.
last week or so, just go tie this back into Vladdy here. Last week or so, my brother texted me, and I think it was a game that we were up like 10-0. And my brother had texted me that in order to help Vlad's MVP race, that we should throw him in relief in some of those blowout games, right? So I screenshotted that and I shared it to our Instagram page. Just as kind of a haha, what do you think? But let me tell you, in the last week, every single time the Jays are playing and it's out of reach, whether we're up 10 or we're down 10, I'm seeing every account under the sun making that same reference now. And it's like,
yeah,
people just take it and run with it, eh?
Exactly. So. Exactly. And then you don't even know where it came from. And next thing you know, it's a half truth. Exactly. Yeah, it's weird.
It's like a self-verifying circle of bullshit.
So I guess what we're saying is, if you heard that Joel Piamps was traded because he did not get vaccinated, and you have not seen any of the retractions or any of the other stuff going on, well, we're here to tell you Joel Piamps officially was vaccinated with the rest of the Toronto Blue Jays back in April. He is a team player. His being moved had nothing to do with that and everything to do with the Kansas City Royals needed an arm, and he did not have a spot on this Jays 40-man. Yeah.
That being said, reports I'm hearing is Nelson Cruz.
They're making room.
Nelson, yes. Cruz was traded from the Twins because he refused to be vaccinated, and he said, I want to play in Florida, where they're easier on the vaccines and the whole mask stuff. So take it for what it's worth, but that's what I'm hearing.
Reportedly, right from here. Yeah. Speculation has it. All right, now we are going to get into actual Nelson Cruz stuff after we're done with all the Blue Jays talk. So let's move on to our next item here, which is Hyunjin Ryu, which everyone, like, Ryu was struggling over the month of June.
Yeah.
And a lot of it had to do, he wasn't locating his changeup, he wasn't locating his cutter. And Pete Walker sat down with him. They went over a bunch of old video, and they figured out what was going on, which was he was dropping his arm slot a little bit. And so he wasn't finishing through with his cutter. So his cutter, instead of dotting that inside corner, all of a sudden was hanging out over the middle of the plate. And his changeup was overthrowing, and it was way off of the plate. So, like, his two best pitches that he was throwing for strikes and dotting the corners all along, all season, April and May, looking dominant as per usual, all of a sudden was off, and he was getting hit. But boy, oh boy, I don't know about you, man, but I'm not worried about the man anymore after his last two starts. He has looked lights out.
No, absolutely. And I have a lot of confidence that that's resolved.
I do too. Yeah, I feel like we're just...
panic factor moving forward for Ryu is -5.
Exactly.
Stripling, on the other hand.
Yeah, Stripling is worth worrying about, I think.
A little bit.
I think this next start here on Sunday is going to be very telling, and we'll be able to kind of judge what's going on. And I think that the front office is going to be watching very closely too, because we are only 7 days away from the trade deadline at this point. So, decisions need to be made. Pardon me. Speaking of the trade deadline.
Yes.
Listen, I did wish to talk about this a little bit. So, there's 162 games in a baseball season, and we're 70 games from the end of the season. Now, the Toronto Blue Jays, yes, they did lose a couple heartbreakers to the Boston Red Sox. They are now 5 games out of that second wild card spot. Listen, in the grand scheme of things, I think every baseball fan has seen 5 games made up in like a week.
Yep.
Lots of times. Yep. Lots of times. Right? Where a team goes 7-0 and they just happen to catch the team that they're chasing slumping.
Yeah.
Or some head-to-head matches, whatever it may be. There is a large portion, and maybe I'm overstating this, large might be the wrong word, but I know that we sat down with Ben Nicholson-Smith on Tuesday. It was a great interview that's up on YouTube right now, as well as all of our podcast platforms. So if you're listening on audio, you can get it there as well. And he was very informative. He only had about 15 minutes, but he made time for us, and it was beautiful. It's a great little snippet. But one thing that was driving me nuts is that there are some comments on there from fans that are like, throw the towel in. Why are we going to give up assets to try and make this team better? And I'm just a little surprised by that sentiment. Like, listen, I'm a realist. I'm also a homer. So I am going to tell you that, yes, of course, I'm always going to be like, maybe this team can pull it off. And maybe I've just got rose-colored glasses on. But, dude, like, this offense is insane.
Yeah.
And to just, with 70 games left and only 5 games out, to just give up, I just don't see the advantage of it. Like, even when you – listen, look at the Milwaukee Bucks, right? They just won the NBA championship.
Right.
Everyone – the speculation and the BS about Giannis not being able to do it, not being that big-time guy, was ridiculous how much that ramped up. But that's the thing with championship teams, is that you need to learn how to win in big situations. And are the Toronto Blue Jays legit World Series contenders right now? Probably not. In fact, I would say no. Now, some ads may change that. Some trades may change that. But I think there is a lot of value in these guys like Bo Bichette and Vladdy Guerrero and Alejandro Kirk, who just got added back to this lineup, right? Like this young core of guys that are 22, 21, 23, mm-hmm. even guys like Cavan, who's 26, yeah. you know, getting a little experience in the playoffs or even in a playoff hunt is a big deal huge. Down the road.
Huge. No, the mental gains that this young core will make this year will pay off dividends next year and the year after that, right? You don't often see a team win the World Series the first year they have a shot at it, right?
Like, there were a couple comments on that video that were just corporate shills for Rodgers. I'm like, no, what the hell? Like, you're allowed to be 5 games out of a second wild card spot with 70 games left in a baseball season and not feel you should be throwing in the towel and not be a corporate shill. Like, again, I'm aware that I probably have rose-colored glasses on at times, but my goodness, can we all enjoy this? The Blue Jays are in a playoff race.
Absolutely.
Anyways, some people will just never be happy, man.
No, I feel sorry for them.
Now, I did touch on it. I did wish to touch on our catching position because Danny Jansen just was injured. Listen, Alejandro Kirk wound up getting injured. And then when he was coming off of the IL, instead of making room on the 40-man roster because the Jays were in such a crunch, they put him in AAA. And you and I love this. Both of us were like, make him force their hand.
Right.
Kirk should be so hot at the plate that they have no choice. And I don't know if you've got the stats up now, but I'd love to hear what he's been doing since returning from the IL.
I do. So in 14 games in AAA Buffalo this year, Kirk is hitting .347 with an OPS of .923.
.350. Pretty like his batting average is .350.
Looks pretty
the last game before they called him up, he went 4-for-5. Like, talk about forcing their hand. Now, again, Danny Jansen, and I hope he's okay, and I hope he gets off of the IL quickly, and I hope that Alejandro Kirk puts up the kind of numbers that Danny Jansen needs to go down to AAA maybe and play his way back onto this team. I think that Kirk is going to be so much better coming back onto this team than he was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
He's hot, man. He's confident. He's feeling good about how he's seeing the ball. He's going to come in and he's going to fit into that number 8 hole or that number 9 hole in the lineup, and he's going to mash.
Well, I think that Danny Jansen injury just saved him from a trade.
Very possible. Very possible. I mean, Kirk is one of the biggest trade chips on this team that makes sense that they can move.
Mm-hmm.
Just with how well Gabriel Moreno is going and just how deep the catching position is for the Jays, which is one of their strong suits when it comes to their minor league system.
We can't get rid of him now. Like, if we're going to make a playoff run, we can't get rid of Kirk, right? Like,
no. Especially no, not with Jansen on the IL.
Because even if Jansen comes back, there's, at this point, you go, he's injured his hamstring twice now, like a re-aggravation. Mm-hmm. You go, can we trust Danny Jansen to be around in late September?
And hamstrings are one of those,
just one of those things,
right? Reoccurring. Yeah, you need it to heal right up, or it can reoccur. It's like the oblique or the groin, right? It's one of those sticky ones. So it is good to see Kirk back on this team. I know that'll excite a lot of Alejandro fans, which absolutely, there are plenty amongst the Blue Jay fandom. So the trade deadline, 7 days away. And of course,
quite a few teams, I don't know, still if, in the thick of it.
Actually, let's talk that for a second. I always mention the glob, right? The glob of teams that are middling teams, you know, teams that are within that 7 to 3 games back of that second wildcard spot. Adam, do you want to go over those teams? Right. Who's in there?
So National League, I'll start there because it is less of a glob. Looks like the Dodgers and Padres have a pretty secure grasp on the two wildcard spots in the NL. The Cincinnati Reds and the St. Louis Cardinals are both like 6.5-7 games back of a wild card. But beyond that, it gets pretty bleak. In the AL, however, we've got the Rays and the Athletics in the wild card spot. And the glob of teams who are close include the New York Yankees, the Seattle Mariners, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah.
Maybe even the LA Angels, if you want to throw them in the mix, are 7.5 games back. So, but I mean, they're getting Mike Trout back. They've got Shohei Ohtani. They're not going to be sellers at the trade deadline.
That's no, for sure. And this is why I think it's going to be a very busy trade deadline. I think that there's going to be a lot of things going on because I think there's a lot of buyers this year. Normally, there aren't quite this many buyers. And I do think that we're going to see a very active trade deadline and probably some surprises, right? Some teams trying to take advantage of their assets and get as much back as they can. Like, look at Nelson Cruz, all right? So the Tampa Bay Rays picking up Nelson Cruz. They did so for a couple pitching prospects, Joe Ryan and Drew Strotman. So for Nelson Cruz, the Tampa Bay Rays picked up $5 million of his salary remaining, and then they gave up their number 10 and their number 21 prospect. This is something that Blue Jays fans should pay attention to because this is the type of deal that I think Atkins and Shapiro will be looking for, taking on some money and then giving up. Like a great example, and I loved talking to him, but a great example of a guy that would fit in with that top 10 prospect type of thing is Zach Logue, that you can actually go on to the walk-off YouTube page and check out his interview. This is a guy who's 25, leads the Blue Jays affiliates in strikeouts. This is a guy who's not a top prospect, but probably a viable arm in the major leagues, or at least he's pushing for that. And I think that's the type of trade we're going to see. I know there's a lot of people out there that are throwing some big names around, right? Groshans and CJ Van Eyck and all these top 10 prospects. I would be surprised if they made a splash that big. I don't think they need to, is the truth. I think that the guys that they're going after, when it comes to a bat and a bullpen piece, you may not need to give up the Rays is a perfect protocol for what I think we're going to see around the league. That doesn't mean we're not necessarily going to see something wild like a Kirk or a Groshans move. But if that is the case, we're definitely going to see a guy coming back with some term, right? A guy who has some years of control. Yeah, a piece that they're going to plug in long term.
Man, if I'm the Rays fans, I'm happy with this, right? This Nelson Cruz trade.
And it's a little outside of what the Rays would normally do. Normally, they're not taking on $5 million. I was actually pretty impressed that they added such a big bat and were prepared to spend a little money to do so.
So, question then. Obviously, the LA Dodgers aren't the runaway World Series favorites that we kind of all expected them to be at the start of the year.
Still don't wish to play them in the playoffs, but yes, I agree.
Do you think this trade is the Rays kind of looking at, you know, hey, we could actually do this year? Or is this a move where they're still just trying to even solidify a spot in the playoffs? Like, that AL East is...
They're one game back of Boston.
They're one game back of Boston. But then you look at, like, the Yankees are just always the Yankees.
Yeah.
And then you look at the Blue Jays. Like, you gotta be... If you're the Red Sox or the Rays, you've gotta be worried about the Blue Jays.
Yeah, no, you're...
I know
you're
the Red Sox just swept us, but, like, you look at that batting order, and you have
you don't wish them to get hot.
Yeah, you have to be worried about the Blue Jays. So, I really think... I know you mentioned it being a busy time this trade week here. The Red Sox have to do something to improve.
I think the Red Sox are going to do something.
So, yeah. The Jays can't stand pat here.
No, no. And I don't think they're going to. And I mean, this is another thing that I get kind of tired of, is of the rhetoric of they better only get pitching. It's like, well, they're allowed to improve all the needs that they need to improve. You don't need to be solely focused on one thing, but I think they're going to address. I think they're going to bring in, personally, if I was to guess, I think they're going to bring in a major bullpen piece. I think they're going to bring in a viable starter, and I think that they're going to bring in another bat of some kind.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right about all that. So.
Yeah. And you know what? This kind of stood out to me here, prospect watch. Let's talk Austin Martin for 1 second here. Okay. This is a kid, and I just wish to reiterate, when I say this is a kid, he truly is a kid. This is a 21-year-old man who is playing his first stint of professional baseball. Like, this is a kid right out of college, and he is currently leading the AA Northeast in on-base percentage. Yeah. The rarity of this is insane. To have a kid who has never played professional baseball start in double A and be able to recognize pitches like he does, to have that patience at the plate. It's not a thing for a 21-year-old.
No, I think.
And he's leading double A.
I don't think we're too far away from seeing him. Not this
year.
I
don't think we're going to see him this year, but I truly think that he's going to make a push to start with this team. Really could.
I mean,
and we'll need to see what happens with the CBA. I mean, if service time manipulation is still a thing that's going to go forward in baseball, then I think the Jays would probably not start him straight out of spring training and make sure to get that extra year. But it's very likely that this CBA negotiation gets rid of it, because service time manipulation is one of the biggest thorns in the MLBPA's cross. So I think we're going to see that go to the wayside, which would mean there's no reason to hold guys back from coming up and getting their MLB debut. Like, that's the thing, is that his plate discipline, that is just mind-blowing to me, that he's taking as many walks and seeing as many pitches as he is. Nope. And he hits for power, and he hits for doubles. It's very exciting. Exactly. It is very exciting. And the Blue Jays going into New York today to face the Mets, or the old Blue Jays, if you will.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Our pitching lines up for this series. Steven Matz gets his first go at his old team. And then you're going to see Ryu tomorrow and Stripling on Sunday. And boy, do we need some wins against this New York Mets team.
Yeah. I'm worried about Stripling on Sunday.
So am I. I'm actually excited for Matz. I actually can see him having a big game today. You know he's going to be up for it.
Yeah, no. Former Met. Definitely a return home of sorts. So,
absolutely. That'll be good. While we're speaking Mets, by the way, I think that one thing that I need to stop doing, Blue Jays fans need to stop doing, is acting like this team, this organization, won the Marcus Stroman trade.
Okay.
I love Anthony Kay, and I truly think that Simeon Woods Richardson is going to be a big piece in this Blue Jays rotation down the road. Mm-hmm. But until they are, this is not a win. Like, Marcus Stroman is having an amazing season, and he is a dominant pitcher, whether you like his attitude or not, that has shown time and time again that he's a big game guy that is going to get it done when the chips are down. When the game is on the line, you would like Stroman in there. And until one of these K or Simeon Woods Richardson emerges, the Mets won the trade because they've got the best player.
No, you're right.
I mean, I'm not the biggest Marcus Stroman fan, but I respect what he does as a pitcher.
No, I'll
you disagree?
You that. No, no, no. You can't evaluate the trade at all until until we've seen what we got out of Simeon Woods Richardson there.
Exactly.
But yeah, of course. I mean, he's got a 2.59 ERA right now. He's been healthy.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's been healthy-ish. He's a good piece in that very dominant Mets rotation. Yeah. All right. Did you have anything else to add Blue Jays-wise before we move on to the MLB?
Well, we got swept kind of by the Red Sox. I mean, yeah. One game got rained out. I just wanted to say, and this is going to sound like sour grapes.
Oh, yeah.
I think we need to, like, again, this is just speculation. This isn't, I haven't heard reports of or anything like that.
No.
But the Red Sox are for sure cheating this year, right? Like they for sure are because...
Yeah.
And I'm confident saying that. I don't know how they're cheating.
But Alex Cora, he's a crafty guy.
Hey, look, here's the thing. Here's my evidence. Alex Cora, manager of the Red Sox, again, after sitting out a year suspension for cheating.
Just to reiterate.
So an investigation determined that he was involved in cheating with the Astros in 2017 when they won the World Series. He was the manager of the Red Sox when they won the World Series in 2018. Was suspended for a year. Nobody expected the Red Sox to be any good this year.
Mm-hmm.
But they are.
They sure are.
I wonder if cheating would play a role in that.
Once a cheater, always a cheater.
Okay. And this is where it comes down to for me is if you cheated so successfully that you won two World Series, why would you stop?
I mean, baseball throughout its history has been kind of the mantra of if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Absolutely. I remember hearing that from my coaches when I was 12 years old. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. I can't imagine that Alex Cora got a one-year suspension slap on the wrist and was like, you're right. I better stop doing that. Like, I mean, to some extent, everybody's cheating. So, like, whatever. I mean, we do have George Springer on our team.
Yes.
But, like, to think that the Red Sox aren't cheating is crazy. Right?
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait for the social media posts of, according to the walk-off, Boston is cheating again.
Yeah, exactly.
So, they don't know how, but they're pretty confident that Cora has found another way.
I don't know how, but they're for sure cheating. Right?
Yeah.
We can agree on that? Am I crazy?
I agree. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, anyways, kudos to you Red Sox fans. You're a bunch of cheaters, but
you're at the top. We don't know how, but we're pretty confident you're doing it somehow.
Hashtag sour grapes for sure.
All right, my man, let's get into Yermin Mercedes.
Okay.
So he just retired. Now, of course, the rhetoric is this is all Tony La Russa's fault.
Let's back it up.
Yeah, let's back it up.
Just to the start of this season, for anybody who doesn't know who Yermin Mercedes is, he's a 28-year-old.
Yes.
Rookie, right? 11 years in the minors, finally kind of made his breakthrough and came onto the scene hot as ever. Right?
Yeah.
I think 8-for-8 to start his career, batted .400 through the first month of his career.
Hammered, 9 home runs? Something like that in April.
Yeah. And then I think they were up like 15-3 against Cleveland. There was a 3-0 pitch, and it was one of these unwritten rules, like just don't swing. They had a non-pitcher pitching, and he belted it. He swung, he belted it, and this was kind of like a big deal after the game, was like he shouldn't swing in that situation.
This is what La Russa said. La Russa came out in the media.
And this is...
at the press release, yeah.
This is Yermín Mercedes' own manager came out and was like, that's Bush League. He shouldn't have done that. Drama ensued. I'm sure there was a lot more drama behind the scenes that we didn't even hear of, because we heard a lot of it that did come out. Recently got demoted.
Yes.
Even more recently retired. Was not happy with his demotion.
Yeah.
How do you feel about all this? I mean, well, so he's out of retirement. His retirement lasted for about a day.
Yeah. I don't know. In all honesty, man, like, everyone is blaming La Russa. He killed this kid's career. We saw this coming. Old man La Russa out to just destroy fun.
Yep.
Personally, he's 28. He, look at his numbers after April. Look at his numbers leading up to that 3-0 count. He didn't become cold after that. He had a rough week or two before he even hit that home run 3-0.
No, you're right.
Personally, I feel kind of like blaming La Russa is not showing the whole picture. I feel like chalking it up to Tony La Russa destroyed this kid's career is not looking at his 11 years in the minors leading up to this, is not looking at his age of him pushing 29, is not looking at the fact that he struggled so heavily before and after this. And I don't wish to be one of those suck it up type of guys here, but I mean, if we're going to talk shit about Blake Snell not being able to handle the bullpen coming up, I kind of feel the same way. Like, if Yermín can't handle a little pressure from his manager, maybe he never had it anyways. Is that too harsh?
No, I was thinking the same thing. And the Snell is a great reference. And I was kind of... I just generally...
I don't think La Russa helped the kid's career. Like,
generally, I just don't like... I don't like guys that aren't mentally tough. As pro athletes. I mean, I'm not the most mentally tough. That's for damn sure. But I'm also not
a pro athlete. It feels crappy to say that. You know, to be like...
Yeah, like...
That is how I feel, though. I'm like, you know, like...
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. We saw it with Ross Stripling last week where, again, like, he kind of just was like, well, moving to Canada, I'm not going to see my wife and kids for 3 months. It was really hard. So that's why I went 1/3 of an inning and gave up 6 runs. Like, okay, man, but you got to be a little bit tougher than that. Like,
yeah. And again, like, I do wish to reiterate, these guys are humans and I'm not expecting them to be emotionalist robots, but, right, but here. Also, you should be a little bit of an emotionalist robot.
I wouldn't want anything to do with Yermín Mercedes if I'm the White Sox. Like, I would trade him.
No, me neither.
I would be like, man, if you're going to just pick up your ball and go home, then, like, good riddance. Like,
now, that said, maybe if I'm, let's say, what would be a good example here? A bottom-feeding team. You know, maybe you're... I don't know. Maybe
I don't know
you're
where
a team
you're going that, with this, so I can't help you with an example.
Maybe you're a team. Maybe you're a team that has a spot for him, and you're looking at him, and you're like, maybe we can turn this into a motivational tool. Maybe we can, you know, refine the skills of this kid and make the White Sox pay for it because he will be motivated to stick it up their butt type
maybe,
of thing.
Maybe the Cubs,
right?
Right across town,
like legit.
Yeah.
That's not even a bad example. Maybe the Cubs, like they're in rebuild, restart mode, retool. Yeah. However they're framing this rebuild. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't like anything about it. It is kind of just lame of all around.
Of Yermin.
It is. It's lame. I mean.
And I am, again, I do wish to reiterate, Tony La Russa did hurt the kid. Like, yeah, he did hurt his chances. He presented an obstacle to an already career full of obstacles, right?
Yes.
But also, I mean, if you can't just look at Tony La Russa and be like, oh, this old man can shut up, especially considering his whole team had his back. Yeah. His whole team came out and spoke out and was like, no, you know, I think he should have been able to swing 3-0. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, they said it with a little more enthusiasm than that.
Yes.
But yes. I don't know. I think we've spent enough time on Yermin Mercedes for one day.
Agreed. But... we'll probably, no one will talk about him again. He might never get another big league at bat. But all right, everybody. I think unless you've got anything to add here MLB-wise, Adam.
No, that's pretty well it for me. So.
Okay, well, thank you so much, everyone in the walk-off community. We really appreciate your support and your constant listenership and how active you are in the comments and the fact you join us for the live streams and follow along and ball bust. And I don't know. I'm always so pleased with everyone who's in the Discord and following along and all the views we get. It's always appreciated.
Absolutely.
You can follow us on Twitter at Walkoff Podcast, on Instagram, the Walkoff Podcast, and of course on YouTube. Cheers, everybody. We'll see you next Friday.
Runner goes, trying to steal third, and that one is belted to left center field, and that baby's gone.
Hey guys, it's Kirby Sneed. You're listening to the Walkoff Podcast with Scott and Adam.
So pleased to be joined by today's guest, pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays organization, well into his season with the AAA Buffalo Bison, Kirby Sneed. Welcome to the walk-off, my man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. We're pumped to chat some ball with you here. And Kirby, you're enjoying a heck of a season so far, my man. So job well done. How you feeling on the mound these days? After the minor league shutdown, it must feel pretty nice to kind of just have a little bit of baseball as usual.
Yeah, you know, it's been 2021 has been a good year so far. You know, it's just good to be back with all the guys. You know, last year seemed like forever, obviously. But yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Just trying to take it day by day, you know, try to slow it down as much as I can. You know, it's a new season, obviously, but it seems to go by fast, you know, with all the days running together and all the travel and obviously you're with all your friends. So, I think so far it's going pretty well. I'm just trying to keep it up. That's about it.
You're a Florida boy, correct, Kirby?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, is that where you spent the shutdown? Did you wind up going home?
Yeah, so I actually was with my folks back in Gainesville. I was there for the whole year. Had a pretty good place to work out at, and obviously I used the facilities a little bit at UF. I had everything I needed, obviously. So yeah, it was good.
That's amazing, man. I know that shutdown was for sure difficult. I mean, a lot of emphasis kind of put on you developing yourself sort of thing.
Yeah.
What were you working on? Did you wind up adding anything to your repertoire or anything like that?
Nothing too crazy.
No knuckleballs.
Nah.
That would have been me if I was a big leader. Yeah. All of COVID would have just been knuckleballs every day.
Yeah, I would say the main thing, I'm very fortunate where I can pick up, you know, my throwing program and whatnot. I can pick it up pretty fast. I don't need a long time to get ready for seasons. So I really just focused on just getting my body right and making sure that I was doing everything I can to, have a successful season for this year. You know, obviously it was far away at the time, but I was just focused on getting back as soon as I could and proving myself as I, you know, always tried to do. I think overall it was a good, just a little setback, obviously, but I think that I really learned a lot about myself through those months. I really broke down what I was trying to work on. I'm starting to use my changeup a lot more, which has really helped me this season. And I focused on that a little bit last year, just in bullpens and whatnot, just trying to get a better feel for it and throw it more. And just trying to get my body right. and obviously mentally just be prepared for whatever was to come at the time.
Elaborate on what you mean by your body right, because I know that's sports talk 101, everyone's trying to get their body right, but when you're when you're actually there working out and your goals are set out, what were those goals?
I always tell it, during the season it's so hard with late nights and you're eating whatever you can get pretty much, you know? So I think just being at home and being with my folks and having a scheduled routine of, you know, I knew exactly what I was doing each day. I think really
you couldn't do anything else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think just, you know, obviously eating right. And then just getting good sleep and just mentally just trying to stay in it. You know, it was hard last year. You know, I didn't go back to the alt site. So I just had to find something within myself pretty much to just push myself. And I think that it really worked out. And, you know, obviously I would have loved to have been up there last year, but I think I really got a lot out of last year at home and just building up obviously some momentum and just some motivation to come into this year and just prove myself.
How did you deal with the uncertainty of the last year? Because it must have been driving you nuts a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't lie to you. It was pretty frustrating. You know, there was a lot of things that I set out to achieve for 2020. And obviously, you know, I can't sit here and say that it was only me that dealt with it. So
no.
Everyone dealt with it. So I think my main thing was just making sure that no matter what happened, I was going to be ready. You know, there was a lot of days that obviously with the uncertainty, you don't really know like what's going on. So it's hard to wake up every day and be like, well, should I go do this? I mean, I might not even play this year. So, but I think just me maturing really, and just realizing that, whenever this comes back, I got to be ready. I think that was what just motivated me.
Yeah, a pandemic can make a bunch of us grow up that didn't necessarily want to quite that quickly, eh? Yeah,
exactly.
I know you touched on your changeup there, but what is your favorite pitch that you're throwing right now?
I would say my changeup, really. Yeah. You know, when I started realizing that, you know, I could play at the next level just in college and that my changeup has always been a good pitch for me. But when I got to college, I was pretty much a lefty specialist, so I didn't use it as much. So then after college, I get drafted with the Jays, and, you know, it's a pitch that I have, but I didn't really use it that much. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really have a good idea of when to use it or how to use it, because I had lost it for 3 years pretty much. And so I think the main focus over the last couple of seasons with just the staff here and myself is I'm trying to throw my changeup more, because it is a really good pitch for me. And it's you know, all the analytics on it are good. And I'm just trying to throw it more. I've been throwing it to lefties too, so that's been a new thing. And it's pretty it's worked out pretty well so far. I think, you know, it sounds cliche, but just being able to trust it, just being able to throw it when I want and just trust it. I think that's the main thing. And obviously to answer your question, it's my favorite pitch right now.
So the change of mindset that kind of got you throwing the change up more, or even wanted you, or you wanted to develop it more, did it have anything to do with the three batter rule? Like, is the idea of the lefty specialist being not really a thing anymore something that kind of motivated you to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I've always, you know, just for me, and just aside from that, you know, I always want to compete, I always want to play. I'll pitch whenever, however. You know, I've started a game this year. That's my first year I've started, you know, first start ever in minor leagues. And, you know, I just want to use as many weapons as I have. And obviously the changeup is a good piece for me. And obviously with the three batter rule, I think that was their focus and just reminded me like, hey, this is a good pitch for you. you need to start using it a little more. And it's really helped me.
And you have touched on this a little bit here in the last couple minutes, and you have been dominant this year. Strikeouts in this league just seem to be bigger and bigger commodities every single game, every single year.
Yeah.
And you, my man, are piling them up. I mean, you're averaging over 12 per nine innings, which is incredibly impressive. What is your mentality when you get on the mound? Like, you're not obviously always trying to strike everyone out, but like, does your approach change when you've got a hitter down by two strikes, or are you kind of going guy by guy, scenario by scenario?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into just that. For me, when I come into a game, I'm just trying to get out. So I'm just trying to help the team win. You know, that's an aspect of it. But definitely when you get 0-2, like going back on what I said earlier, I'm just trying to slow the game down as much as I can. Right. You know, it's I had an outing a week ago against Lehigh where I had walked three batters, but I was getting ahead every batter. I was getting ahead. And then I was just trying to be too fine. So I think that's the focus there for me, is just when I do get ahead, just don't change my mentality. Don't try to do too much. And just throw whatever they put down, really. And I think that's helped me. You know, I don't go out there trying to strike everyone out. I just want to help the team win. So however I can get an out, really, yeah. that's how I'm going to do it.
Well, it's been interesting in baseball over the last couple of years to watch strikeouts go up. And I think a big part of it is the high fastball has become, it's become one of the biggest weapons in literally every pitcher's arsenal. It doesn't really matter the velocity a guy throws. A guy's going to throw it up high there. And do you think that this will self-correct? Like, do you think hitters are going to adjust to this? Or do you think the game's kind of become so strikeout and home run prevalent that guys are going to continue to be up there swinging at that high fastball?
You know, I agree with that. Because
it's been prevalent, right?
Yeah. You know, and even for me, like, I'm a sidearm lefty, and I've been throwing fastballs up too and having right? success with it, you know? And I just think that there's so much technology and things that we use now to get info on hitters, and, you know, hitters get info on guys, you know, us, obviously pitchers. And I think the way the game's going now, I mean, it's all about numbers. It's all about, you know, obviously, like you said, strikeouts, home runs, OPS, whatever, you know,
yeah.
It's crazy how much it's changed just since we first got into minor league ball. But I think where the game is at now, it's awesome. And I mean, obviously, like, you know, with all the new technology and guys hitting and trying to just, you know, score as much runs as they can, and guys trying to get as many strikeouts as they can, I think it makes the game a little bit more competitive. And, you know, obviously, if guys know how to use their tools, then I'm all for that.
I can imagine even being able to decipher the information that you're being presented is a big deal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, just, for me,
you're given every stat out there, and if you don't know what you're looking at, yeah.
I'm kind of mixed on that. I've always come just, you know, whatever the catcher puts down, I'm going to try to execute. But just, you know, in the last 2 years, I've just learned so much about myself through analytics and through, you know, my numbers from low A till triple A now. So I think it's definitely a good thing. But, you know, some guys may not use it as much as others. But all in all, it helps everyone.
Just kind of finding what works for you, I guess. Eh?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So you have worked your way up, my man, this Blue Jays system over the last 5 years. You have played at every minor league level for almost every Blue Jays affiliate. Yeah. Did you ever at any point, we were just talking about information, did you at any point have a coach or even a teammate or something like that noticed something and pointed it out to you, and it was kind of an aha moment where you're like, oh my goodness, and you changed it and it just worked?
I mean, I could honestly say that for every level. When I was in low okay. A, when I was in low A, we had Jeff Ware, who's our pitching coach now. And I was just out of college, and I was just trying to get adjusted to pro ball life. And I had a long, long season where I'd thrown a lot in college that year. and I was just trying to get adjusted. So he helped me out a little bit. High A, we had Mark Riggins, and he was awesome. He was kind of old school guy, but whenever you struggled, I had a great year that year. So I, you know, he kind of left me to the side and just, you know, whenever I needed help, he'd come. But I think he just, you know, taught me just to, hey, you have all these weapons, you know, every pitcher pretty much that we had that year had done well because he started that where, hey, you have this pitch, you need to use it more. You have this pitch, you need to use it more. And then Double A, we had Vince Horseman, who obviously was a great guy too. Everyone loved him, but I think he was more mentally just helped us out. You know, when times are tough, you know, it's you just gotta trust your stuff. And then in 19, I was over on the mound. I was over all the way on the first base side, and my slider wasn't getting to the plate as much as it should have. You know, it was kind of just wasn't. I wasn't throwing it for strikes as much. So our pitching coach there just helped me move over a little bit to the middle of the mound. And since then I've been doing that, and it's really helped me because fortunately I have a good amount of movement on all my pitches. So I'm just trying to throw them pretty much right down the middle and see what they do most of the time.
Just an adjustment as to where you were
standing on the mound. Yeah. Wow. It's so many little things that I've learned along the way that seem so, you know, tedious and seem so small, but they really, really helped me mentally and physically.
I know, and you touched on this, that you actually made your first professional start in baseball here in pro ball. And I mean, kind of a pseudo opener role, I guess, as you just pitched a couple of innings, but you have come into the game in this year in almost every situation. Do you care when you come into the game? Like, do you have a preference, and does your mentality change depending on what situation you're coming into?
I would say yes and no. You know, obviously I just want to pitch and help the team, like I said before, but in college I was a lefty specialist. So there was a lot of times when I would come in with runners on, you know, guy on second or a guy on first and second, third. And, I think that's where I enjoy it most because you don't really have time to sit there and think. You just got to go out there and get outs. So I think a lot of times when you just go out there and you're just throwing it and not really thinking too much, I think that's when, you know, guys are really good.
It's so funny to say that. Like, guys say that all the time, that like, I don't want to think too much about it, but it's almost like being in the zone though, right? Where it's just, you're just doing it. Yeah.
And that's I really like that spot coming in. And like, let's say, you know, like, for example, like seventh inning, there's two guys on, I come in, get two outs and get out of the inning. I think that's what I enjoy most. You know, 2020 was a tough year for him as well, you know, not playing and not having a season. And I think him and I just really worked our butts off to get where we're at and to, you know, especially for Sauce, man, he's come a long way from when I first met him. You know, he was a starter and in Lansing together when we were there, and he just kind of had some tough times, and he worked through it. And you know, he's done a lot of good things for this organization, and he's really worked for himself, really. And to see him go up there and do as well as he's doing, man, it's just a testament to how he's carried himself and how he's grown over the years that I've seen, because I've been with him pretty much every day. You know, me and him hang out a lot, and me and him are really good, really close. And
he mentioned that, like, he was on the show
just awesome.
About a couple weeks ago, and he mentioned how close you guys were, and he was incredibly honest about, like, that he was dealing with depression during the 2020 season and our non-season, I should say, and that he even had decided he was quitting. Like, that's kind of what he got into. He's like, I was calling guys, being like,
he had talked to us around Christmas time of last year and just said he doesn't know if he really wanted to do it anymore. And you know, it's tough hearing somebody say that, because you know, everyone here, everyone on the team deals with times where they, you know, they question, you know, they want to do
everything,
other things, you know? Yeah, exactly. So, I think him And, you know, all the guys, you know, pretty much everyone in our org who didn't get to play last year, I think they found a new just a motivating tool to come in and just, like, it's almost as if you don't care. You know, I'm just going to come in and pitch as well as I can.
Yeah.
And I think for him, that's what he's done. And obviously, you know, he's hopefully he's going to play for a lot longer. And, you know, this last year is really going to be a building tool for him for the future.
100%.
Because it's already shown. It's already shown.
It really has. Yeah. And it's interesting because you kind of touched on it there too. It's not necessarily that it created mental toughness, this shutdown, by any means, but it's almost like everyone kind of had to find themselves a little bit. Like Adam and I are stand-up comedians and kind of went through a similar scenario, right? Where like there's nowhere to tell jokes anymore. All exactly. the venues in Canada were closed, and you kind of had to be like, well, what am I doing here? So it's been interesting to hear how everyone's kind of mentally dealt with it. So you, my man, so let's get into this, because the Jays bullpen has been riddled with injuries and struggles this year. And we just talked about them, the sauce, right? Sacedo got his call up in large part because of that. And you're a lefty that could, you know, be one injury away or even a poor performance away from getting a call up yourself. Do you keep an eye on that sort of thing? Or do you try to bury your head and not worry about it?
You know, I can't sit here and lie and say I don't think about it. You know, it's hard. It's hard when you're, you know, it's close. Hard when, yeah, exactly. You're so close. And you know, the one thing I'll say is there's a lot of guys down here, especially at AAA, that have had great seasons and their stuff is unreal. You know, I've grown a lot with just over the 2 months that I've been with this group here. And I think that we're all just, you know, if we don't get our chance, we're still going to just keep pushing, you know, and that sounds, you know, very cliche and stuff, but I think everyone here pretty much is, you know, we always pay attention to what's going on up there. And obviously all of us hope to get up there soon, but the only thing we can handle right now is just pitching for the Buffalo Bisons. So.
And that's the mentality you got to have. It was kind of eye-opening. Yeah. We had James Dykstra of the Fisher Cats on, and I don't know how much you know his story, but he was like out of affiliate baseball altogether in 2019 and kind of got noticed by the Jays scouting staff because of YouTube videos of all things. Yeah. But he was talking about how it had really hurt him in 2018, how much mental energy he spent watching how guys got injured and stuff like that. And he was like, it was a big learning experience for him to really understand that he had to take a step back from that and not worry about what's going on with everyone else, you know?
Yeah. It's easy to get caught up in all that. You know, and I can't sit here and say I haven't done it before. Mm-hmm. But I think just from this last year, just not knowing and having so much uncertainty about my future, I think it's really just kept me focused on myself and just making sure that I'm doing whatever I can do to one, help my career, and, you know, on a side note, help the team win. And I think if I can just handle that, I think everything will work out in the end. So,
yeah, you can only worry about what you can control, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So Adam and I always joke on the podcast here that when the Yankees bring in a prospect, they're told to shave their face and cut their hair. Yeah. And guys show up at Jay's camp and everyone's told you should probably grow your hair out if you want to fit in, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you're ready to go here for that.
Oh,
How long have you been sporting the Dwayne Allman look, my man?
Yeah. So before spring training of 2020, I had cut it just below my ear.
Yeah.
And
you better take your hat off and let us have a look at that.
Yeah,
we're gonna talk about it.
I can put it down too. There we go. Oh, there we go. Guys want to see it?
The hat doesn't do it justice.
Yes.
Hold on.
Amazing.
I just got out of the shower not too long ago, so it's a little wet. But yeah,
there you go.
That's it.
The speed flow.
Yeah. No, but to answer your question, I think before the 2020 season, I had cut it. And I was just going to let it go throughout the season. And obviously we got sent home. So I just said, you know what, I'm not going to cut it. And then it came to spring training of this year. And, you know, my parents were asking me and my girlfriend was asking me, hey, do you think you're going to cut your hair a little bit? And I thought about it. And then the day came where I was supposed to leave and I hadn't got it cut. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to rock it. And I've been growing it out since, you know, last March or last February. And I'm going to get it cut eventually.
Love it, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna let it grow for a little bit longer, maybe cut it this fall sometime. But yeah, I mean, I never had long hair growing up. I never had it in college, and I got to the Jays and just said, why not? And I really like it. You know, I really like having long hair. And I think that it just, you know, it's me now. I don't really know what I look like with short hair. Great. So,
yeah. So you were drafted in 2016, but you have played baseball your whole life. I'm curious, what's the most mischief or like the funniest thing that you've seen a team you've been on do during a rain delay?
Well, I don't want to throw him under the bus, but Sauce is extremely funny dancer when we have rain delays or just in general after a big win or something. But I actually just thought about it. We had the playoffs in 2018. We were actually in Trenton where we're playing now. We were playing against the Yankees and we had a rain delay and they were going to wait to play the game the next day. And our manager, John Schneider, said, no, we're playing this game tonight. We're going to win and we're going to go home because these guys need rest. So we started the game, I want to say at like 11:45.
PM.
Yeah. Yeah. And that rain.
So there were no fans,
there.
Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And we had.
Just getting ready for pandemic baseball before it even
exactly.
happened.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Yeah. And we had a bunch of good players on that team. We had Bo, Vlad, Kev, and obviously they were having unreal seasons. And it was just an awesome group there. And you know, that rain delay there, like, you know, in a normal season setting, it would be miserable sitting there for 4 hours. But with that team, it just was another day, and we all got along. We were having a great season. Obviously we won the league that year.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. I would say that's the most memorable.
Schneider was like, no, we're not calling this game.
Yeah. I mean, that double A travel there in the Eastern League is just, man, it's rough. So
yeah,
we were going to play that game no matter what. So
would you say that is the worst league for travel? Longest bus ride, stuff like
100%.
That?
100%.
Yeah,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
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 So what do you like to do, Kirby, when you're not playing baseball? Like I said, we're comics. So when I'm not doing comedy, I escape by nerding out on baseball, right? So
yeah.
When you're looking to escape, what are you doing to take your mind off the game?
You know, I've been on a couple hikes here on the off days, just finding little parks and stuff to go to. I really like being outdoors. I grew up on a farm in Florida, just north of Gainesville. So yeah, I just like to be outside. I like fishing. I fish a lot with my brother when I'm home. And just,
are you and your brother tight?
Yeah. We weren't as tight as when we were little, and he was traveling to every baseball tournament and he was sick of it. But now that he's grown and he's going to UF too now, so
nice.
Me and him are pretty close, I would say. Yeah.
Is he your younger brother?
Yeah. Yeah. He just turned 21 a couple months ago. So
yeah, it's funny how sibling rivalry, you become really good buds in your adulthood, but in childhood it's a little bit dicey at times. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So out of curiosity, my man, and I bring this up because you touched on it a little bit here. How often is everything in your repertoire working when you're on the mound? And I know a big part of being successful as a pitcher is being able to be crafty and kind of creative when things aren't working your way. When you're struggling with control or just can't find a pitch, what does your brain do? What mentality do you take?
Yeah, there's been a couple of times this year where it's usually where my slider is on and my changeup is just okay, or my slider is just okay and my changeup's on. And I think the main thing is just, you know, like I said before, the whatever's working for you that day, or whatever you feel comfortable with and trust. I think that's what I go with. And we have two catchers here that are really good. Juan Gratterall.
Yeah.
He's been in the game for a long time. So
seasoned
he's been a big man. Help to our pitching staff. Just, he knows the game and he recognizes, obviously now we've thrown enough to him to where he knows our game. And, you know, obviously I've thrown to Riley Adams. He's here now, and Kirk, yeah. I've thrown to all of them. So I think definitely when your stuff is not on, if you have a catcher that understands and can read the game a little bit along with you,
goes
I think
a
that
way,
really right? helps. Yeah.
Yeah. So going back to 2019, you actually played in the AAA All-Star game, my man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That must've been pretty validating for you. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was cool. So we had Justin Schaefer, who had made it the All-Star team, and he got called up, and then we had Zach Jackson also was supposed to make it, and his grandmother had passed away at the time, so he was going home for the All-Star break. And I got called into we were playing in Syracuse, and I got called into the office literally the day before the All-Star break, so I had no idea. And our manager, Bobby Meacham, said, hey, what are you doing this week? And I was like, I don't know. I'm just going to hang out in Buffalo and whatever. And he was, all right, well, you're going to get on a flight and fly with me to El Paso. You're going to the All-Star game. I was like, I just was like, what? And so, like, yeah, fly. I mean, it was a good experience. Yeah, I mean, that was my first All-Star game in the minor leagues, and I played with a couple guys that I had known, and it was a great time. You know, it was just a good experience, obviously, and, you know, El Paso was a great venue for that.
That's very cool, my man. So we have played Canadian trivia with about half a dozen of the guys in the system.
Okay.
Brody Rudning and Zach Britton, 1 out of 6 is what they got. They were terrible at it. And Rudning's a Minnesota boy, so there's no excuse for him. James Dykstra and Fitz Stadler, they got 3 out of 6. And the guy who holds the title right now as the champ for Canadian trivia is Zach Logue with 5 out of 6. Ooh. You want to try your hand at it here? Should we give her a go?
Sure, might as well, yeah.
All right. Okay, so your first question here, Kirby. Toronto is in what Canadian province?
Ontario.
Nailed it. All right. Good start. I like it.
Yeah.
What city does the NHL team, the Flames, play in?
Calgary.
Yes. Hey, Kirby. All right. Yeah. Both of those stumped Brody.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've played with a ton of Canadians like Romano and others. So
yeah,
I've been getting into NHL a little bit more. So
nice.
I think I got it going.
Well, that'll endear you to Canadians' hearts.
Yeah.
The last time the Toronto Blue Jays went to the American League Championship Series was which year?
I'm going to say 2015.
Your draft year, bud, 2016.
Oh, I was going to say one of those two.
Yeah, they did it both. They did it both years, but 16 was the last one.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Canadian Larry Walker was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2020. What Canadian MLB team did he play for from 1989 to 1994?
Was it the Expos?
It was the Expos.
Well done.
Nailed it, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay. Question 5. So far you're 3 for 4. You're doing good here. What's the Canadian delicacy of fries, cheese curds, and gravy called?
Poutine.
Nailed it. Kirby.
Well done.
All right. Your final question. What is the official national animal for Canada?
I know this one. Dang it.
It swims, if that helps at all. And it's got a big flat tail.
That's an otter?
We're going to have to go with beaver on that one.
Beaver, okay.
You're going to get it. Four out of six, buddy. You're just slightly behind Logue there.
I mean, I've been in the system this is my sixth year, so I should know a little bit of this, I guess.
The funny thing
you're
is...
You're ready for the bigs, buddy.
The funny thing is, I don't even know what the Canadian national animal was. And then when I thought maybe the beaver, maybe the Canada goose, or maybe the moose. And then when Scott gave the hint of it swims, I was like, well, that doesn't narrow it down at all. Beaver, hey?
All right. So now we're going to switch gears here a little bit, Kirby. We're going to throw to Adam here. He's got some questions. We do a segment called Foul Territory. So he's going to get maybe a little bit more away from baseball with some of these questions.
Okay.
First question, right into baseball still. As a prospect, how do jersey numbers work? Do you get to pick anything, or is it just kind of assigned, here's what you get?
It's a little bit of both. Sometimes, like when I repeated levels, they let you pick, you know, guys that are coming back.
Right.
But new guys usually don't get to pick. This year was a little weird with, you know, obviously we have the Trenton jerseys and the Buffalo jerseys.
Right.
I didn't choose my Trenton one, but the Buffalo jersey I got to choose. So
what is your number and why?
I chose 33 for the Bisons, and then I'm 68 for the Thunder. It's kind of – it just – a lot of it depends on, like, what jersey size you wear. Because even if you do want a number, it may not be your jersey size.
So, like minor league sports.
Yeah, exactly.
For kids.
So, yeah, you have to kind of work through the system on that one, see what you can get.
So, do you have a number? I guess like predetermined for you then, if you were to get called up to the Blue Jays at this point, like do you? Is
I
there already
yeah,
a Kirby
no.
Sneed number 83?
I don't think so. Okay. I'll wear whatever number up there. So
that's the right answer.
Whatever they give me, I'll put it on.
That's the right answer. Awesome.
Yeah,
so. Okay. So you grew up in Florida. This is a question I've always wondered about. How big of a deal is Disney World when you live like a few hours away?
It's not.
You just don't care.
Yeah. I went once when I was probably 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And that's about it. I'm not big into, you know, amusement parks or, you know, obviously Disney World or anything like that. But I have friends that I've played ball with that are from Orlando, and it's almost a hassle.
Yeah.
All the traffic and people that are there that go see
all
Disney.
The Canadian kids that are like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly.
Yeah. No, I would say for Florida people, it's just another thing. So
when you win a World Series with the Blue Jays and the sideline reporter asks you, where are you going to go to celebrate? You're not saying Disney World.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to the West Edmonton Mall.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. No, that's good. Okay. So you mentioned having a girlfriend. What does date night look like for you during the season?
Just a good dinner somewhere. She's actually in New York City right now, so she's pretty close
nice.
To where we're playing. So I get to see her a good bit. But yeah, we usually just get a good dinner, or maybe she'll cook. She's a pretty good cook.
Nice.
So yeah, so that's about it. I've been with her for 6 years now, so I think the big crazy dates are out of the way.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
We won't tell her that part. Don't look forward to anything fancy, sweetie.
Yeah.
All right. So growing up in Florida, are you a football fan at all?
Absolutely.
Okay. So who's your team then?
Well, unfortunately, I'm a big fan of the Jaguars. My dad's from Jacksonville. So, yeah, I usually go to about two or three games a year.
Well, hey,
you know,
you got reason to be optimistic now that Trevor Lawrence is going to be a star, right?
Yeah, and then obviously I grew up in Gainesville, so I'm a huge Gator fan. Have been to just about every home game except for about 3 or 4 since I could remember. Yeah. So my dad's been had season tickets for over 30 years now. Wow. So,
Well, this is going to tie nicely all together then. What are your thoughts in general on Tim Tebow? Obviously played for the Gators, spent some time, I guess, to mixed success in the NFL, and then pursued a career in baseball, and is now actually trying out again with the Jaguars. So.
Yeah. I think the thing about him is he's always stayed true to himself, and he's just done whatever he wanted to do. I've met him a few times just through playing through the minor league system with the Mets, just playing against Binghamton and Port St. Lucie and even Syracuse.
He was like bigger than life in college football.
Yeah. Now, it was,
and those, you came those through years, after him, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was, when he was in college, I was only like 12 or 13, 14. So yeah, he was a humongous deal.
And did he was the legend live on, like once you got to the Gators?
Yeah. He's best Gator that there ever was, honestly, in Gainesville, and a bunch of people would tell you that. But yeah, just the way he carries himself too, and you know, even meeting him, you can kind of tell that he doesn't want all the spotlight on him, and you know, he's. Everyone comes up to him and says, oh, I'm a big fan, you know. So for me coming up, it was I just wanted to tell him that, you know, obviously I was from Gainesville and grew up a big fan. And
yeah
I didn't want to fanboy him too much and try to, you know. But yeah, man, I obviously he was a big inspiration growing up. Just the way he carried himself and the way he went about things was always
he kind of nailed perfect. It too, that he always just did what he wanted to do, and that is very admirable.
Yeah Well, that's basically all I got. I just wanted to kind of get your opinion on Tebow. I know some people have strong opinions after he left football that he was kind of a circus trying to have a baseball career, but I've always kind of respected it that you know, he believed in himself, if nothing else, right? Like, you got to give him credit for that. So
yeah, and when we first played him, it was evident that he didn't know, like, he just hadn't been in the game for a long time, you know,
like a natural athlete, but not a ball player.
Yeah, you could tell that he was definitely off. But even just the 2 years that he was in it, and we were coming up and playing against him, you could tell how quick he had picked up on things. And I think that's just a testament to how hard he works and how he carries himself, and he wants to be the best at anything he tries.
So
I think that's what I admired about him when I was growing up.
So how do you think he's going to do now with the position change to tight end in the NFL with your Jaguars?
To be honest with you, I think this whole move is for ticket sales. Yeah. I don't even think it's
that's fair.
He's going to play, and he may do okay, but I think the main thing, even when he came out of college, was why don't the Jags take him? Because this is a great he grew up in Jacksonville. He's obviously a hometown kid. Why not take him and get ticket sales?
I'm sure jerseys, you know, would be through the roof too.
Yeah, whoever we drafted that year, I'm sure they're not even playing anymore. So why not draft Tebow and let him be on the team and obviously bring a bunch of buzz to the city. But yeah, I hope he does well. You know, obviously I'm a Jags fan, so I hope that the team picks it up a little bit. But
well, I'm sure you're in good hands now with Trevor Lawrence. So
yeah.
You got the Trevor Lawrence hair, so
we'll see. Yeah. Appreciate it.
All right. I think Scott's got some listener questions for you now.
Okay, yeah. Do you have a couple more minutes here, Kirby? We've got
I got all the time in the world.
Okay. So your first question is from Laura in Toronto, and she says, "Hey Kirby, so happy you're on the podcast. Have you been to Toronto or anywhere in Canada yet? And if so, what did you think?"
My first off season, I visited, my girlfriend lived out in Seattle. She was working out there after college. And, I'd had a good friend, Tom Robson, who came up through the system. And he lived in Vancouver. So I went there, visited him for a couple of days, and actually hiked in Whistler, which was awesome.
Nice. Yeah. Whistler's
beautiful. And then in spring training of 2019, I had gone to Montreal. I went and played there against in the exhibition games.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And I've only been to Toronto once, and it was just a quick fly through. Like, I was in the airport. I didn't go to the city or anything. So I'm hoping I get to see it soon.
Yeah, hopefully you have plenty of time there soon. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so your next question is from Jonathan in St. John, New Brunswick. So that's East Coast Canada here. Mm-hmm. He says, Kirby, who is the most difficult hitter you face to get out? Is there anyone in pro ball that just seems to have your number?
I think there's so many guys. so many dudes I've faced, you know? I would say maybe there's a couple of dudes from the Yankees that are Mike Ford has done pretty well against me, even though he's a lefty. We kind of have a little battle there. And then let's see. I mean, I could sit here and say that I've faced Bo and Vlad in many spring trainings and many, you know, live VPs, and they've had my number pretty good. But so
that's
I think everyone can say that. But yeah, I mean, off the top of my head right now, I don't really know anybody that has done extremely well or bad. So,
well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, my man. Your final question is from Miguel in Vancouver. And he says, hey, Kirby, who is your favorite player growing up? And is there a pitcher that you currently model yourself after?
Growing up, I had watched Andrew Miller. He's actually from Gainesville, and he went to a local high school that I didn't go to, but it was a rival high school of mine. And he came up and went to UNC. I watched him there, and obviously in the majors, having had success with the Indians and other teams. So I always looked up to him and loved watching him pitch. And obviously it motivated me a bunch to try to get where he was at. But I liked watching the Red Sox growing up. So I was a huge fan of John Lester, just the way worked. Yeah. And obviously being left-handed.
Yeah.
And always loved watching him, his starts. There's not really anybody that I model myself after, but I do pay attention to a lot of the left-handed relievers and you know, just on our team, you know, Meza and Barucci and guys like that. But also, you know, across the league, just seeing what they do and how they use their stuff. And obviously everyone's different, but it's definitely good to just see, you know, what guys are doing and how they throw and how they are approaching hitters.
Awesome. Honestly, Kirby, thank you so much for your time, man. Really enjoyed chatting ball with you here, brother.
All
the best with the rest of the season, and we're rooting for you, buddy. Hope to see you in Toronto soon.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him.
Thanks for listening.